So we're going to do a round the table Parsha class. This week's Parsha is Tzav. And what the topic we're going to talk about is the nature of inspiration, of feeling a sense of excitement or passion, also known as a fire, in our Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit can sometimes be dry, dull, doing it because we have to, doing it because we're used to it, blah, blah, blah. There's a saying that there's a very thin line between coldness, dryness, coldness in spiritual matters, and heresy, denying God. If you're feeling cold about God, you're one step away from actually just rejecting the whole concept. So it's important that we develop some kind of emotional connection, not just obedience. And that's a topic we're going to study about today. So, without further ado, I'm going to ask Daniel to kick it off.
Okay.
Go ahead, page 4.
On the verse, a constant fire shall be kept burning on the altar, it must not be extinguished. The Talmud Yerushalami comments, constant, even on Shabbos, constant, even in a state of impurity. As frequently mentioned, all the components and services carried out in the physical sanctuary and later in the Beis Hamikdash also exist in the spiritual sanctuary and in the Beis Hamikdash, present with every Jew. Within every Jew. The altar corresponds to the person's heart. In the sanctuary and the Beit HaMikdash, there was an outer altar and an inner altar. So too, in our hearts, there is an internal and an external dimension. The commandment, a constant fire shall be kept burning on the altar, was given regarding the external altar. The spiritual implication of that mandate is that our hearts must be burning with visible flames of excitement regarding spiritual matters. The external dimensions of our hearts should be ablaze with godliness. This is true even on Shabbos, a day when we cease work and rest removed from the worldly matters. Accordingly, we are forbidden to engage in mundane activities on that day. The counterpart in our divine service is an inward focus, an effort to comprehend and internalize divine light, as implied by the commandment, "You shall call Shabbos a delight." These two spiritual motifs are interrelated. As a result of the godly light that the person grasps, he withdraws from all mundane activities. One might think that since the God is absorbed in the comprehension...
Since the person is absorbed in the comprehension
of godliness, he stands above emotional excitement, and the external dimensions of his heart need not be aflame. Yet the commandment, it must not be extinguished, is also addressed in such a person. His heart must burn with godly fire even on Shabbos, even when he has attained such a lofty spiritual state. At the other extreme, even a person...
Can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Just to flesh this out a little bit. Like, you could see it even in less religious contexts, where like, if you get too excited about something, okay, you're a keener. You know, first year student gets excited about St. Paddy's. Alright, you'll stick around long enough, you'll realize nothing to get excited about, right? Mm-hmm. And the height of maturity basically means you never get excited about anything, because you've seen it all. If you're getting excited, clearly you're immature, you're inexperienced, you're naive, you're young, you'll learn. There's nothing to get excited about, ever, anywhere. Right? And it's like a sign of sophistication and maturity. You never get excited. You're always cool. The young ones, the immature ones, they get excited. He's saying here, it's even you could even have that mistake in a religious context. You might think, yeah, I'm a Jew and I'm studying, but like to actually feel excitement, that's naive, that's childish. I'm an intellectual, I understand, I'm getting into the depths, the profound ideas of Judaism. That's where I'm, you know, expressing myself to the fullest, and that's like the highest degree of connection to God you could possibly have. And this excitement business and the emotional stuff is fluffy. It's for people that are less developed than I am in my Yiddishkeit. I'm more along, you know, I'm more sophisticated, I'm more developed, and I'm past that stage. So that's the response to that, is this idea that the fire has to be burning always. Even on Shabbos, which is a day for study and intellectual achievement in your Yiddishkeit, even then, you don't ever grow out of getting excited about God, getting excited about Judaism. It's never too immature. It's never too beneath you, right?
What?
Just wanted to flesh that out a little bit. Sorry for interrupting
you. Of course. So at the other extreme, even a person who is estranged from God, godliness, should not think he no longer shares a connection with God. Heaven forbid. He is told it must not be extinguished, even in a state of impurity. Do not look at anyone's present situation. It must not be extinguished. Applies to all. Everyone has a responsibility to see to it that his passion for the for fire, for godliness, is not extinguished. The constant fire of his personal altar must be continually fanned, for his godly fire cannot be allowed to burn out. Such efforts will lead to the positive expression of the charge. It must not be extinguished, as interpreted by the Magid of Mizirch, then not all negative matters will be extinguished.
So there's a flip side to the not extinguishing fire. So we know that technically and practically it means never put the fire out. You always have to get, which means you're constantly adding more logs to the fire in the most literal sense. Magid interpreted it also as once you have developed this fire for God in your heart, this excitement, which you're cultivating constantly, you're never growing out of it because you're too high. And you're never too low and too sinful and too bad of a Jew to be excited, which is another mistake you might make. Then because you have that fire, the positive element is that the fire and the passion, the excitement for Hashem and for Yiddishkeit could actually serve as a force that eliminates any element of negativity that's in your life and in your heart, because you might have an inkling of, you know, maybe let's just use a simple example of, you know, depression. You might have an inkling of depression and feeling totally despondent and in despair about life, but if you cultivate this excitement for Yiddishkeit and this love for Hashem, that can actually extinguish the negative elements in your psyche with this positive fire, passion for everything that's good and holy. All right. Number two. Neil, you want to read? Please.
To further explain the interpretation suggested by the Magid of Mitzri, a constant fire is necessary to extinguish the rot. One must continually burn with excitement over the Torah and its mitzvah. It is not enough that in the past, even just a few moments before, one was excited about his observance of the Torah and its mitzvahs. His excitement must be continuous. If he becomes cold for even one moment, the negative factors surrounding him may find their way in and ensnare him. This is also the reason for the mitzvah to recall daily the attack by Amalek. Remembering is necessary to keep up one's guard and prevent the frigidity of Amalek from taking control of even one moment. On the contrary, a constant fire should be kept burning on the altar. It must not be extinguished.
Okay, so now we're emphasizing the constancy element. You can't feel good that, you know, you had a great morning. You really focused, you said Modani, got out of bed, you meditated, you davened, now you're focused, and now you take your foot off the gas. You never take your foot off the gas. Yeah, you can keep going. That was too short to pass the baton to Ryan.
There is another dimension involved in maintaining a constant fire, and that is that it prepares for fire that descends from above. As our sages say, even though fire will descend on the altar from above, it is a mitzvah to bring ordinary fire. The fire man brings from below is a preparation and an arousal from below to draw down the fire from heaven. When is it possible to draw down the fire from heaven? When the fire from below is in a complete state. Then it elicits fire from above.
Hey, can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
There's just a bunch of ideas that we're throwing out here. I just want to flesh them out a bit. So, number one, what we're talking about here is the way things would work in the Beit HaMikdash, that although there was miraculous fire that would descend from heaven to consume the sacrifices, still a mitzvah that the regular fire, man-made fire, would have to be brought and lit on the altar, which was done by the Kohanim. And the fact that you had fire that was man-made, fire that came from heaven, combining on the altar, gives us, we're now transferring all these ideas to the spiritual, psychological expression that they might have. So we have, okay, so there's fire, which means excitement about God. and Yiddishkeit. So fire from above is one kind of excitement that Hashem gives you inspiration where you didn't necessarily work for it or earn it or make it happen. And then everybody knows there's a certain time just you feel inspired for no special reason. It happens. It's a mood. You catch a mood. It's not like you sat there trying to get into the mood. It just hits you. And then there's also the excitement that you develop and you try to work on your own with your own meditation, your own reflection. Try to bring yourself to a state where you're passionate and excited about Yiddishkeit. So the idea that there's both in the practical sense, in the Beit HaMikdash, has a parallel in our spiritual life. And we're making the point now is that in order for you to be able to sort of earn that fire from above, it has to start with the fire from below being in a complete state. We're going to flesh out what this means.
Go ahead. We see this motif developed in the Torah readings of Parshiyosav and Shmini, which describe the days of the sanctuary's dedication. The entire sanctuary, all of its sacred utensils and the altar had been completed. Moshe and Aaron were present and had already offered sacrifices. Nevertheless, the divine presence had yet to rest within the handiwork of the Jewish people. A remnant of the sin of the golden calf still existed within them and prevented the revelation of the divine presence. It was specifically on the eighth day when the fire from below reached its complete and perfect state that it extinguished the entire knot, i.e., it entirely nullified the sin of the golden calf. Only then did the fire emerge from before God, and the divine presence rest within their handiwork. What is the extraordinary quality of the fire from above that requires a perfect state of divine service and a fire from below? All created beings are limited. As such, their divine service and the spiritual heights to which they can reach also have limits. In and of themselves, those achievements will not last forever. For them to last forever, they must draw down influence from above, from him who is entirely unlimited. Accordingly, we see that during the 7 days of its dedication, the sanctuary was erected and dismantled because it is possible for created beings to fashion anything that exists independently or eternally. Only on the eighth day, when the divine presence rested within their handiwork and fire emerged from before God, was the sanctuary erected and not dismantled. That was when it was truly erected, i.e. endowed with internal existence. Mm-hmm. On the basis, it is possible to understand the distinction between the 7 days of the sanctuary's dedication and the eighth day, and the concept that the fire from above emerged specifically on the eighth day. As is well known, the number 7 is associated with the weekly cycle. It is related to the natural order of the worlds. By contrast, 8 is above this cycle, relating to godly light that transcends the worlds. This is identified with the fire from above described previously.
So what we're trying to explain here, the question he asked is, why is it necessary? We made an assertion that it's necessary for the fire from below, your efforts to be in a state of completeness, in order for you to earn or deserve that response from above, the fire from above. Why? So the explanation is basically like this. Like, you can talk about the same idea I think you could find in the context of miracles, where Hashem can perform miracles. Hashem can do whatever he wants. Sure. Hashem generally, with rare exceptions, doesn't just pull off miracles while you're sitting on the couch. You want a miracle? Max your efforts out to the best of your ability and then say, God, I've done everything I can. You know? An example, there's a family here that I know who weren't able to have children. The couple was not able to have children. And for a number of years, they went to treatments and they tried doctors and everything. And nothing worked. And then finally, the doctor tells them, I'm not taking your money anymore. It's not right for me to sit here and treat you. I'm sorry to tell you, it's never going to happen. Now you've maxed out the natural order. There's nothing more that you can do. The only thing that could happen now is a miracle. Now they have two kids. She went to the mikveh. It was a whole story. Mikveh was a big part of it. But the doctor told them flat out, I can't take your money anymore. It's just, I don't feel right. Sorry? They got natural pregnancy. It wasn't even a treatment. The doctor said, that's it, we're stopping. Right? They were totally crushed, as you might imagine. Young couple being told you'll never have children. Totally devastating news. And they came here, you know, all overwhelmed and not knowing what to do. And all I told them was that the Rebbe would tell couples in these situations, the Rebbe's standard advice was practice the laws of family purity, go to the mikveh and keep all the associated laws, and that opens the channel for Hashem's blessings. I can't promise you anything, but you want to know what else you can do? This is one more thing that you could try. I have a boy and a girl now in our Hebrew school. It's crazy. But you can't sit there and say, the flip side is, you can't sit there and say, without going to any doctors, without trying what you can, God, I need a miracle. I'll just sit here, and you let me know when it's ready. It doesn't work that way. Hashem demands you max out what you can do, and then you can say, what else? Nothing else I can do. The only hope now is a miracle. Oh, okay, in that case, maybe you'll get your miracle. So the same thing over here. When it comes to developing an emotional excitement about Yiddishkeit, you could say, look, I'm going to sit here and I want God to inspire me. Because it happens, right? You catch a mood. Inspiration hits you from out of nowhere. So I'll just sit here and I want God to inspire me about Judaism. I'll just sit at the Seder and I'll wait for the moment, for the mood to strike, and then it'll be good. I don't have to prepare. Do I have to prepare for the Seder? Do I have to prepare for Pesach? I just sit there. I'm sure at some point I'll get zapped with a feeling of, you know, guilt and tradition and toxic blend of Jewish emotions. I'll feel something. Okay, that's almost like sitting on your couch waiting for the miracle of children. Or, no, I have to make the investment. I have to prepare myself. I want to have a meaningful Seder. I want Passover to mean something to me. I have to prepare mentally. I have to put myself into it. It means I have to study. I have to reflect. I have to, you know, maybe journal, go for a walk, meditate, whatever. Do stuff that will put you in the frame of mind to start to really apply it and connect to it in a personal way. No one can do that for you. The biggest rabbi in the world can't do that for you. It's your inner world. No one's going to live your inner world for you. If you want to have that experience, you're going to have to make the investment. And after you make that investment to the best of your ability, then you can look around and say, okay, God, hit me. And it's a whole nother dynamic when you're operating that way. And that's the point we're seeing from the way the Mishkan was built, that for a week, Moshe put it all together every day and took it down. Every day, put it together, took it down. Every day. Because that shows two things. On one hand, it shows that you have to make your own efforts, not just sit there passively. On the other hand, it's also an acknowledgement of the limits of your own efforts. I can never achieve something that only Hashem can give me. Whatever I do is short term, is limited.
Look at those pajamas. They're so sparkling.
What is he?
So that's that.
Show me your pajamas. Not into
it. All right. Ryan, you want to read? The ankle.
Yes. Number four. Despite the fact that created beings cannot achieve eternality, and in and of themselves, nevertheless, as mentioned, the fire from above is elicited through the perfection of man's divine service in generating a fire from below. In other words, when a created being does everything he can, even though his efforts are limited, God grants him fire from above, an unlimited light. This is alluded to as well as in the word constant in the verse. A constant fire shall be kept burning. Constant reflects a lack of limitation, something not bound by time. Since time is comprised of limited elements, every second, minute, hour, etc. is defined, it must itself have a limitation. Even so, although it is limited, the perfection of man's divine service generates a fire from below that elicits an unlimited response from above, an eternal quality. Moreover, that eternal quality is also drawn down within time, and time itself is endowed with an eternal dimension. The light burns constantly. In our terms, this means that within nature, we can see unlimited success and attainments that transcend the bounds of nature.
Right? What it looks like is a person doing things and pushing themselves to their absolute limit, and that somehow things that were so improbable or impossible actually happen. It doesn't mean necessarily that you'll see the sea splitting, but it'll be pretty close. It'll be something like, you know, 250 students coming for Shabbat dinner. Very improbable statistically. Very unusual. Still miraculous. All right. Number 5. Want to read, Daniel?
Okay. The above concepts serve as a lesson regarding our conduct. Every Jew is a sanctuary for God, as it is written, they shall make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell among them. Meaning within each and every Jew, nevertheless, it is not enough that one is a sanctuary. A constant fire must be kept burning. If the fire, the warmth, and the vitality is lacking, the sanctuary is incomplete. Even though the person studies the Torah, fulfills the mitzvot, and carries out all the spiritual counterparts of the service in the sanctuary, if he does so without energy, the divine presence will be lacking in his efforts. So great is that lack that it is possible for him to remain tainted by a trace of the sin of the golden calf. The Torah and its mitzvot must be carried out with excitement and vitality. This applies in each of the 3 areas: Torah study, divine service, and acts of kindness. With regard to Torah study, it is not sufficient for a person to fulfill his obligation by studying 1 chapter in the morning and 1 chapter in the evening, and then for the remainder of the day to remain indifferent to Torah study. Nor may the Torah be studied in a muted tone, without the person feeling any connection to his studies. Instead, he must fulfill the commandment, which requires that the words of the Torah shall not depart from your mouth, meaning he should feel a constant connection to Torah study, and it should be the focus of his day. Moreover, the Torah he studies should be interwoven with his entire being, all his 248 limbs, as implied by the verse, "All my bones will declare it." To accomplish this, one must study with vitality.
Hang on a second. So, we're studying Torah now. Right. In order to have this idea of making a sanctuary for Hashem within us, and the sanctuary is very much essential to the sanctuary, to the Mishkan, the Beit HaMikdash, is fire on the altar. Without the fire, you don't really have a functional sanctuary, a functional Beit HaMikdash. So the Rebbe is arguing here that there needs to be this passion and excitement about every aspect of serving Hashem in order for it to qualify as a home for Hashem, a dwelling place for Hashem in us. So when we study Torah, it has to be an exciting one. In other words, if you were excited about it, then even after you finished, you wouldn't just disconnect and detach from it. If you were actually excited by it, then presumably, even when you finish, you're still lingering, you're still inspired by it, you're still maybe thinking about it, it's still a part of you. It's like you got something done. Now, I'm not arguing that we're already there. Maybe we are. Maybe some of us are. This is, in many ways, an aspiration. It's a goal we want to get to. But the point is that it's not enough just to study. It's not enough just to show up. And if you thought that you were so amazing for showing up, I got news for you. You're just getting started. Because there has to be that whole emotional connection. And that's the point we're making here. So how do you have an emotional connection to what you're learning? Study with vitality, which means just turn up the volume and shout. If you make it louder, does that count as vitality? What does it look like to study Torah with vitality, with energy, with passion? What do you think?
Are you asking us?
Yeah, I'm asking you. It doesn't say here exactly what that means. What would that look like? What does it mean to do anything with passion and excitement?
Like truly care about what you're doing and
to look for and apply the lessons learned to our life.
Sure.
Well, like I said earlier, it was like be excited about it.
Excitement, interest, care. Yeah. I mean, to use a shallow example, sports fans are passionate about their team. Right? Fan comes from fanatic. They're fanatical about their team. They care. It means a lot to them. Not every fan is the loudest person in the room. You could still be a very passionate fan. It's not about volume. Right? But a real fan doesn't go to sleep without knowing the score, even if you couldn't watch the game or be at the game. You for sure check the score before you go to sleep. They had a game tonight. How'd they do? And you got to know. I care. Right? It matters to me. It matters to me. So perhaps, just to make sure we understand what this means, study Torah with vitality, with energy, with passion. He says, he does say over here, like in the manner of how you study, like it shouldn't be too muted. If you're just like reading it, like you read a recipe. You know, it's a little bit too chill. So there is to some degree, part of it is the way you actually study. If you're too relaxed when you study, I mean, it's hard to argue that you really care. But when we look at you, you look like you're just reading off the back of a shampoo bottle. You really care, but you're reading it so dispassionately. There's no facial expression. There's no energy. There's no... I'm not getting any vibes of excitement from you. So that's part of it. But I think also is you care. And you want to know what the lessons are. And you say. That's how you study Torah in a way that's real, that's alive. You know that it matters to you. All right.
Yeah.
Let's go.
With regard to the divine service of prayer, one should not view prayer as a fixed obligation, but as a request for mercy, a supplication before the omnipresent. When a person prays in such a manner, his prayer will be energized. With regard to acts of kindness, which can be seen as a general category including all the mitzvahs, one's approach should not be merely to fulfill this obligation, but rather to fulfill the mitzvahs behitter. What does that mean?
Behitter means with extra care, going all out.
Okay. And in the most beautiful manner possible.
Yeah.
This results from the vitality with which one performs the mitzvah.
Right, not just getting it done, getting it over with, like, I really want to do this well.
That's what I remember our first Torah session, I asked you about my sister and my mom, who just reads, like, the
right, well, in the shul, we talk about shul.
I'm saying, like, does that really count, like, if she doesn't know what she's saying, but she's still doing it?
So you managed to throw your sister under the bus twice in the span of a few weeks.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Okay. Torah study, the divine service of prayer, and the observance of all mitzvahs in this manner generate perfection in the fire from below, which in turn elicits the fire from above. The divine presence rests within the person's Torah study and divine service, and indeed within everything he does, even his material activities. I explained previously, all the above draws down God's infinite light within the limitations of our material world. In a personal sense, this means that even in the garments of nature, it is possible to see divine blessing and achieve success that is above the natural order.
Beautiful. So the ultimate, I think, the bottom line is, in any practice of Judaism that you do, you can approach it in basically one of two ways. You can approach it as, okay, I got to do this. It's obligatory and I have to get it done, which is, it could be worse. I mean, let's give a little credit there. You could not even feel a sense of obligation and just ditch it. So at least you're showing up. At least you feel the sense of obligation and duty and responsibility. That's good. But it's not with a lot of excitement. It's just dry and getting it over with. Ideally, you approach it from a perspective of, I'm happy to be here. I want to do this. I care. It matters to me. Let's do it. You know, I don't want to just get the cheapest tefillin I can so that I can say I bought a pair of tefillin. Tell me what's out there. I want to get a good one. Show me the nice stuff. Right? You're going all out because you care. I don't get the cheapest car I possibly can. I get a nice car. Same thing. And when we do that, that is us maxing out our natural capacities. We do the best we can. And we turn around and we say to Hashem, okay, Hashem, hit me. Hit me with the next dose of inspiration and awareness and sensitivity that will only come when a person is maxing out whatever they can do.